The crisis over Kashmir seems to be relaxing a little today. India made an important concession to Pakistan, allowing Pakistani aircraft to fly in Indian airspace. The Indians say they made the gesture because there was a reduction in raids by Muslim militants from Pakistan. Still, five Indian warships are in the water near Pakistan, and there is no Indian ambassador in Islamabad. Later in the week, U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld will be in the region to try to further diffuse tensions.
Last week, we asked you for your questions about the conflict over Kashmir, about its history, about the region's geography and demographics. Today, we have those questions and some answers from two men who study South Asia. Marshall Bhutan, the president of the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, welcome to you.
Thank you, John.
And Joseph Schwartzberg, a geographer and professor at the University of Minnesota's Program on South Asian and Middle Eastern Studies. Welcome to you, Professor Schwartzberg.
Good to be here.
Let's start with just a basic historical question from a listener.
My name is Stephen Hutter Lorette. I live in New York City. My question about Kashmir has to do with the background of the Hindu prince in charge of the majority Muslim province in a partition in 1947, and who he was and how he ended up doing what he did, which was, you know, make everybody unhappy for the next 50 years.
Professor Schwartzberg, why don't we start with you, and why don't you start just one step back with the partition of India after the British colonial period ended in India?
In 1947, when India was partitioned, the decision was to divide the Muslim majority provinces from the non-Muslim majority provinces. The former became Pakistan, the latter became India. But in addition to the directly ruled provinces of the British Indian Empire, there were over 600 so-called Indian princely states. The largest of these in area was the state of Jammu and Kashmir, and it was ruled by a Hindu Maharaja by the name of Hari Singh. He had the option of either joining India or Pakistan or remaining independent. When his area was invaded by tribesmen coming from the newly created state of Pakistan, he was unable to fend off that invasion and sought Indian help. The then Governor General, Lord Mountbatten, said, well, we can't give you help unless you accede to India because it's not in our territory. And he, given that choice or lack of a choice, he signed an instrument of accession on October 26, 1947, a little over 2 months after the creation of India and Pakistan themselves.
And one of the issues there, of course, was the demographic makeup of the area that was ruled by this Hindu prince. And that will gets us to our next question from a listener.
My name is Mary Ann, and I live in Miami, Florida. I'd like to know what the demographics of Kashmir are, especially what percentage of the country is Muslim, what percentage is Hindu, and possibly what percentage is other religions. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Dr. Schwartzberg, why don't you take this one as well? The issue of ethnicity and demographics is an important issue right here, right?
Yes. Roughly, we can say that on the Pakistani side of the line, there are about 4.5 million people, virtually 100% of whom are Muslim. On the Indian side of the line, there would be about 10 million people. Of those 10 million, perhaps two-thirds are Muslim, not quite a third Hindu, and 2%, not even 2%, somewhere between 1% and 2% Buddhist, and about 2% Sikh.
Let's go on to our next question from a listener. This one is about previous conflicts between India and Pakistan.
Hello, my name is Paul Bauer. I live in Honolulu, Hawaii. And my question is, have India and Pakistan ever been in a war before?
Marshall Bhutan, do you want to summarize the conflicts between the two countries previous to the current standoff?
Yes, certainly. Three and a half, I would say. That first, there was the war, which followed on the as Joe has described, on the accession of Jammu and Kashmir to India. Then in 1965 was the second conflict between the two countries, which came about as a result of really of conflicts over along the what is now the line of control between Indian Kashmir and Pakistani Kashmir. And then in 1971, a war which was did not center on the on Kashmir, but which centered on the separation of the then eastern wing of Pakistan, what is now what is today Bangladesh. The half of a conflict or half of a war was in 1999, over the infiltration of Pakistani regular troops, albeit in irregular guise, into what is now the Indian side of Kashmir. It did not result in a full-scale conflict. Indian troops did not pursue Pakistanis across the line of control, but there was it came very close to that.
Of course, one of the reasons that the world has become so concerned about this conflict between Pakistan and India over Kashmir is that both nations have nuclear weapons. And our next listener question is about that.
My name is Mike Standall. I live in Wichita, Kansas. Where did Pakistan and India get their nuclear weapons? Thank you.
Marshall Bhutan, do you want to start?
Certainly. From the beginning, India's leaders, in particular then Prime Minister Nehru, were intent on broadly on India developing its scientific and industrial might. Early on, the development of nuclear energy, nuclear power, atomic power as then called, was a high priority. Much of the underlying science was the same. And finally, in 1974, it exploded. It had what was called a PNA, a peaceful nuclear explosion. Everybody really recognized that as demonstrating India's capacity to develop nuclear weapons. But it really almost all of India's ability to do this was indigenously developed. They did get heavy water from the Canadians and technology from us because we assisted them in developing nuclear power, but it was really almost entirely indigenous. Pakistan responded to the Indian explosion in 1974 beginning actively to pursue its own weapons capability, and over the next 25 years, it did so by hook and by crook. As Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, the Prime Minister of Pakistan at the time, said, you know, if we have to eat grass to do this, we will. They begged, borrowed, and stole the technology, the equipment, the material to create a nuclear capability and eventually nuclear explosive devices.
Finally, why don't we come up to date here, and we have a few questions from listeners about the current state of the crisis.
My name is Kahini Ranaday. I'm calling from Ridgefield, Connecticut. And I was wondering why the conflict between India and Pakistan has intensified over the last few months when the two nations have been separate and independent from each other for the past 50 years.
Professor Schwartzberg, do you want to start?
Why it's intensified in the last few months, I think, has a lot to do with September 11th. All around the world, countries that have been facing insurgencies have tried to cast the insurgents in the role of terrorists because that plays well not only in the United States, but in countries sympathetic to the United States, which suffered the attacks that it did on September 11th. India indulged in that exercise along with many other countries. Especially if the insurgents happened to be predominantly Muslim, it played well.
Marshall Bhutan, would you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I would. I would just add to it a bit. There was an attack by a Pakistan-based militant group on the Indian Parliament on December 12th. It was far and away the most damaging attack by a terrorist attack by a Pakistan-based group. There had been several others. It was clearly an effort to kill the Prime Minister and several members of his cabinet at the seat of Indian democracy. And that greatly galvanized India to, as Joe suggests, to take advantage of the connection between what had happened on 9/11 and India's situation and try to bring a stop to it.
Next, a question about the stakes in this conflict.
My name is Beth Bailey. I live in Modesto, California. Why is it that both India and Pakistan are so intent in terms of Kashmir? Are there resources? Is it oil? What's at stake?
Professor Schwartzberg, why don't you start us off with an answer
to that
question?
Well, it is certainly not oil. Kashmir does not produce oil or natural gas, and in fact, it's relatively resource poor if we think of resources in terms of minerals. But it really isn't an economic question. I think it's a question of national pride and identity, which is how each nation views itself, India as a secular state, Pakistan as an Islamic state. And I would say that more than any other single factor is the crux of the matter.
Anything to add to that, Marshall Bhutan?
Yeah, a couple things. On the Pakistan side, I think the intensity of the conflict has been strengthened by the role of the military in Pakistan's political life. The military have ruled Pakistan for more than half of its independent existence, and this has been at times, if you will, a justification for the military's extraordinary role in Pakistan's national life. On the Indian side, there is great concern that the loss, if you will, of the valley of this only India's only Muslim majority province or major part thereof would encourage separatism in India's otherwise extremely ethnically, religiously, and linguistically diverse nation. And that India has spent most of the last 50 years defusing separatism throughout the subcontinent and made considerable progress in that respect and looks upon the Kashmiri issue as very dangerous in that respect.
We have one last question.
My name is Chris Watanabe. I live in Aliso Viejo, California. We know what India wants. We know what Pakistan wants. What do the people of Kashmir want?
Marshall Bhutan, how would you answer that question?
Yes, certainly. While it's impossible to measure objectively at this point what Kashmiris want, sadly, both sides, India and Pakistan, have not found favor with Kashmiris, and Kashmiris would much prefer independence. I think, realistically speaking, independence is not an option. It's the one thing on which India and Pakistan agree, that they do not want an independent Kashmir.
Well, thanks to both of you gentlemen for helping us sort this out today. Marshall Bhutan, the president of the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, and Joseph Schwartzberg of the University of Minnesota. Thanks again.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
For more on the crisis in Kashmir, go to our website, npr.org.